Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Julian Duan. He is an influencer that I came across on Instagram, and I find your messaging to be very helpful for me. You know, I've listened to some of your clips maybe 30 times on like a drive, and I'll let it sink in, you know. So thank you for joining me today.
Of course. I mean, I think it's an honor and privilege too. And I really like what you do, creating a voice, bridging the gap of the Vietnamese community. So I think that's huge, because there's a huge voice that's not being said and being heard.
Thank you. You know, your journey is like really interesting. You didn't have a really like a, it sounded like you had a little bit of a rough childhood growing up, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell me about that? You know, especially inside the house, you know, with your mom and dad. And
So I think a lot of the challenges that I experienced growing up, I think a lot of Vietnamese Americans can relate. You know what I mean? My parents, you know, immigrated here from Vietnam. And, you know, obviously any immigrants, especially after 1975, coming over here, it was all about survival and preservation, right? The hard part for me was I felt like I was kind of in the middle place of America, not quite Vietnamese enough, not quite American enough. And on top of that, you know, being diagnosed later with autism spectrum disorder and ADD kind of explained a lot. Because, you know, growing up in a Vietnamese household, especially in Vietnamese America, it's all about being the model minority, right? Keeping quiet, let your results show, and not talking back, that's another one. And so for me, just being curious and not understanding things, asking questions, a lot of times that could be seen as bad or challenging or a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How bad did it get?
You know, with my parents, I think it's very similar to a lot of Vietnamese American parents. It's like my way or the highway.
Yeah.
No means no. So it was challenging because I didn't go the traditional route. Like for me, you know, especially with autism spectrum disorder, I didn't really fit in with school. And for me, the huge focus was I just wanted to be accepted. I just wanted to have friends. And so because of that, school didn't really make sense to me either. I didn't really get good grades. Did really good on tests, just not homework, because it wasn't my priority. So especially, you know, parents that came over here, it's all about survival, right? And, you know, grades are very important. Getting a good college is important. Getting a good job is important. And so when I wasn't following that path, it caused a lot of friction. Yeah.
I think the average person knows very little about autism.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. When I tell people I have autism.
Yeah, I can't see it.
Yeah, usually people go like, you're autistic? I'm like, you don't look autistic. I'm like, what does that mean, right? But there's different levels of autism. You know, I'm level one. So for me, the way my brain works is it's very heavily based on pattern recognition. And I had to learn social dynamics. I had to learn people, essentially.
Wow.
I mean, it was tough. Like in high school, it was kind of like all the kids got the manual on how to be a human being. I just got the cliff notes. So I didn't understand the subtle cues and the little subtexts and everything. And, you know, had to study that. But, you know, it actually became a huge, I would say, you know, superpower for me. The qualities like pattern recognition, hyper-focus, in school didn't really work, but in business and content creation and in the world, it's paid off.
When I see you talking to the camera, I see how probably that understanding of pattern recognition, because you're just so like, it's just so clockwork to you, how natural your delivery is.
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn differently, but like just any skill, the more you do it, it starts out, it's uncomfortable, but once it becomes comfortable, then you become confident.
Yeah. Mm. Now, this whole idea of learning these nuances that you're dealing with social cues, to somebody like me, like I can't even fathom what that even means. But like, can you break down a little bit about like what are you learning? How can you learn this?
Like, I didn't know what was cool. I didn't know what was funny. I just wanted to fit in, right? So I'll give you an example. I grew up in Riverside, California. I went to Arlington High School. So there wasn't a lot of Asian kids, right? And so a lot of my school was predominantly Hispanic and Black. And so at the time when I went to high school in 2005, FUBU was really popular. And FUBU stands for us, by us, right? And I didn't understand the subtle cues of, like, that's Black culture. That was created from their trauma, something that they can own that's theirs. All I knew was all the kids had it. And the cool kids had it. And I was like, if I wore that, that must mean I'm cool. So I sold like blanks. I sold music CDs and stuff that I burned. I got some FUBU. I showed up to school. And then you know what? The next thing you know, I got beat up at school. Someone grabbed me by my shirt, put me up against the wall. I was like, hey, like, why are you wearing that? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's cool, right? And they're like, no, FUBU, do you even know what that means? I'm like, no, it means for us, by us. You're not one of us. So little things like that, you know. Another one I think is kind of funny, again, because my school is Black, you know, a lot of African Americans, and you know, there's like gangs and stuff. I didn't understand certain terminology. You just hear people say it and you just think it's normal. And so, I don't know, it's so funny. I don't know if I should say this or not, but so
say it.
So one of the guys at school that I was actually cool with, yeah. Right? He was gang affiliated. He was a blood, right? And I didn't know, but you know, watching movies and stuff like that, I was like, what's up, cuh? Like, and like, he put me against the wall too. He's like, what did you just say? Like, and then he caught himself because he knew that I was a little bit different. He was like, hey, you shouldn't be saying that, you know? And then he kind of broke it down to me. I was like, oh man, like little things like that. No idea.
But I think that's such a natural thing for young people, like for us to go through.
Yeah.
You know, but did that show up more often than not in your early life?
It did.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of my high school days being young was very performative. It was me trying to mirror what I saw without understanding what I was seeing, mm-hmm. and then replaying it back, not understanding the context and then whatnot. Yeah.
And how do you think that sort of understanding now relates to what you do in your life today?
It helps me, one, listen before I speak and always seek to understand. And then more so, instead of creating a performative identity of how I think people want me to be or how I should be, it's finding root in confidence in who I want to be and how I want to show up.
You know, if you don't know what Julian does, I advise you to just hit pause right now real quick. In the audience, and listen to Julian Dwan's Instagram clips, because they really are a guiding light to really making things very clear about going from like point A to point B and just really removing the bullshit.
Yeah.
Right? How did you get to that point where you're able to really put all that stuff out with such clarity?
I would think number one, I think this comes from my autism spectrum disorder. I just reverse engineer everything, kind of like the same way an engineer would figure out systems. And I just built systems, and you know, even human behavior is a system. Yeah.
And do you feel like because you know it inside and out now that you're actually living what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought about that a lot. I'm like, I wonder if Julian really falls off the wagon or.
I mean, I'm a human being.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, when you build a certain skill, especially in areas that you're comfortable in, it comes naturally. But I will admit that in certain situations that I'm unfamiliar with, I can find myself regressing and then overanalyzing and everything. And I just got to catch myself, breathe, and then just go back to my identity and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But you didn't fall into this sort of line of work like right away, right? I mean,
No.
Can you tell me the journey that you went through?
So, I mean, again, I think trauma can be a beautiful thing if you don't treat it as a prison sentence and as something to learn from, right? So like in high school, I remember a lot of times I would eat lunch in a bathroom stall because I was bullied, I was made fun of. Like being Asian was not cool when I was young. I remember, you know, my parents packing me lunch at leftover, you know, banh mi o, right?
Yeah.
You know, banh mi dak mi. I bring it to school, all these kids have regular sandwiches, they're looking at my sandwich like, what is that? That's gross. And it's, you know, for all the young, you know, Vietnamese Americans now, like, it's cool being Asian, right? Like, my friends, like, what do you want to eat? They're like, oh, pho. And like, my white friends, right? Totally. But you would never think that before. But I remember towards the end of high school, I was a little bit bitter. And I said, you know what? Some way, somehow, I'm going to figure this out. I want to make a lot of money. I want to become successful. And I'm going to show them that I'm not a loser. I'm not an outcast and everything like that. So that's kind of where it started. And then when I was in college, I was recruited into a network marketing company. I was cold marketed on a college campus. Actually, it wasn't even me being recruited. It was a friend of mine. And so my friend was being recruited. They did this whole pitch like, hey, technology company, we're expanding, right? You can make extra money part-time around school. And there's a lot of pretty girls, right? Mm. My friend immediately, because he understands subtext, he was like, sounds kind of sketchy. Sounds like a scam, as most people would, right? And I'm just like, that sounds good. Like logically, I'm like, that's what I want. That sounds good. And I told the guy, I was like, hey, I'm interested. And what's funny is he looked at me and he says, I don't think it's for you.
Whoa.
Not like a sales technique of like pulling away.
He literally meant that.
He meant that. He looked at me like, this guy's gonna be more trouble than he's worth. And you know, network marketing, kind of, you know, has a negative context. And a lot of it I do agree with, because there's a lot of bad actors in the industry. The vehicle itself isn't bad. It's just certain people that operate in it, right? And I remember it's funny because so many people try to recruit everybody and they bribe them to go to the meetings. If you go to my meeting, I'll buy you lunch. It was the opposite for me. I was like, hey, if you give me a shot, I won't let you down. I just need an opportunity. Like, I'll buy you in and out. I'll treat you to dinner. Like, it was the opposite. And then when I went to the meeting, it was very different, right? You know, it was very rah-rah, like high energy. And it was just different for me because I wasn't used to that. I was used to being a shell, quiet, reserved. And here are people like freely, like, you know, openly talking about their goals, their dreams. And I remember the speaker there said something that changed my life forever, right? He said, if you can have everything you want the way you are, you should already have it. If you want more, you got to become more. And that logically made so much sense to me that it just clicked. I was like, man, I spent my whole life trying to do more, trying to take these actions to fit in, trying to take all the, instead of doing more, I need to focus on becoming more. And so my love for the industry is not necessarily the money, it's really the personal development that came with it. But that's really what started the journey.
Yeah, because all of that belief in being more is sort of like the foundation of what you talk about.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to think about ourselves the way we really want to be taken in the world.
Yeah, because a lot of us are operating from expectations that are not even ours. Right? Like from our parents, right? Especially being Vietnamese American, you know, I think we're very unique because, you know, when your parents leave from another country, a war-torn country, and they want to preserve their culture, their language, you know, everything. And when they come to America, it's not about thriving, it's about surviving. And so I think a lot of our culture is just based on that. And I think the challenge with that is, it's a great place to start, but not a great place to stay, because it kind of puts a ceiling on us, right? The whole mono-minority philosophy, right? And everything, just fit in, be quiet, you know, keep a low profile, let your results speak, that whole thing. And, you know, for me, that was part of the challenge, because I wanted to be free. I wanted to be able to express myself. I just didn't know how. I wanted to strive for more. I didn't want to just settle. Yeah.
So this whole networking, marketing, MLM, right?
Yeah,
multi-level marketing. How did you survive and thrive in that world if you were coming with a bag of no tricks.
Yeah, so I didn't have any friends. I didn't know, you know, I didn't have a big social network, which a lot of people think you had. So my first 5 years was really rough. I went to all the meetings. I studied all the presentations, the trainings. I could finish the joke before the speaker would even say it. But people liked me, but they didn't follow me, right? And then so it wasn't until like 5 years in, one of my mentors that I became really good friends with, like I was really good at making friends at that point, because they're like, wow, this guy's so nice. He's so positive. He's eager to learn. And he felt bad for me, right? Because in some companies, right, there's a monthly requirement that you have to purchase to stay active and stuff like that in the company I was with. And he sat me down. He says, hey, we became good friends. You always come to help set up the meetings. And like, I genuinely like you. And he said something that was like a gut punch. He's like, I know we tell everybody anybody can make it, but I'm getting to the point where I don't know if you can do it. And it's replaying all the traumas and the stories, right? And he says, here's what I'm willing to do for you. You pay every single month, right, to stay active. You do all this stuff. You're spending all this money, but you're not making money. And he says, I took this training, you know, years ago, and it changed my life. He's like, it's expensive, but I'm willing to pay for you because I feel guilty because you do so much, but you're getting so little. He's like, at least if I pay for you to go to this training, you get what you get from it. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, at least I know I did something for you. It was kind of out of guilt and, you know, belief too. And so it was a transformation training, kind of like Tony Robbins on an intimate level.
What's the name of the program?
It was in Las Vegas called LifeWorks.
Okay.
Right? So it's based on this old training that originated from LifeSpring.
Yeah, Landmark, right?
Yeah, Landmark. Mm-hmm. They're a different branch,
right.
Very similar philosophies.
See, when I hear you talk, I know that it comes from that world. And we'll talk about that.
Yeah. That's cool, because a lot of people are not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps because I, you know, 20, 25 years ago, I went through Landmark.
Yeah.
And I talk about it very sparingly, but I don't think I've ever talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
So we'll get into it, but I want to hear your experience.
It's like network marketing. People that know, the vehicle itself is valuable, but there's things inside of it that could be exploited or
whatever it is, right?
You know, obviously when it comes about less about the training, more about enrolling people into the training, and you're not even getting paid, I'm just kidding, right? But it was there that it kind of reaffirmed that first quote that I shared with my first mentor, right? And that's when I really learned about be, do, have. And that's when I was like, okay. Then it started to click. I was like, And the way that I explain it, it's kind of like, you know, I know you'll appreciate this example because you come from film. It's like, imagine two actors go into audition for a role, right? One memorizes the lines, they know it word for word, they know how to drop out every single beat, but the other person lives the role, they breathe the role, they are the role. One person leaves confused that they didn't get the part, the other one does. And that's business, that's life. It's, are you being the role? Not playing the role, being the role of what you want. And then that's when it clicked. And
when did it click for you? Because it's a weekend thing. Life Work is a weekend thing.
So right after that, I did the whole program, the whole 90-day program and everything. And what ended up happening was, and this, I feel so bad, right, when talking about this. But my dad got me a job. I was working at a call center for Edison. And I hated it, right? And I was at a breaking point. I was still trying to make my business work. My parents see me spending all this money, racking up my credit card, not getting anything. And they don't believe. In the beginning, they said, we'll support you in doing this because hopefully it'll make you have friends and build skills.
Man.
They didn't think it would make money. But once they saw that I was like diving into it, dropping out of college, they were so against it. And I remember my dad gave me an ultimatum, right? And he said to me, he says, either you quit, stick with the job, go back to school, and you can stay at home, or you keep pursuing your network marketing thing and you're out of the house. And so when that happened, my mentor at the time had an opportunity to say, hey, in Houston, Texas, I have one lead. I'm willing to give it to you to sign him up because I don't have time to go out there. You work it until I go out there. I'll get an apartment. You can stay there. Just make money so you can get your own apartment. And this is Houston, Texas, like 1,500 miles away. And I know my parents would say no. 2 days before Christmas, I packed everything, my four tours, and I drove to Houston, Texas for a shot and a chance. And when I got there, I took all the tools that I learned from the training. And I said, okay, nobody here knows who I am. So I literally can reinvent myself. Because a lot of times when we meet people, especially people that know us, it's very easy to go back into that role that they're used to, right? And I said, okay, I'm in a new place. Nobody knows who I am. I'm here to expand the company. That part's true. I do know the skills. I do know the presentations. I know what to do. Now that I have the tools from the training, I looked at all the mentors I had. What made them great? What made them special? What made them successful? And I said, all I have to do is embody that, right? And use it as a checklist, develop those skills, and embody that. And then literally when I went there, in 6 months, I built a team of 1,000 people. I made my first $10,000 a month in a totally new market because I was free. There was nothing there to hold me back and I could reinvent myself. And it was just heartbreaking because I didn't tell my parents. They called me on Christmas Day. They're like, hey, when are you coming home? And I told them I packed everything, went to Texas. And for 2 years, it was rough for my parents because my dad told me he couldn't sleep, you know, like every night he would stay up worrying about me. And that's the thing, as I get older, I really appreciate my parents. And I think when you get older, you realize that your parents are not always right, but majority of the time, not all the time, but majority of the time, because they care. And that's where they're operating from, right? And so, yeah.
Hey, like I'm all choked up right now. I understand that. Yeah. I get that. I want to go back to life work.
Okay.
Right? When you were going through that, I can imagine somebody like you understanding the concepts very easily.
The technical stuff, the philosophy stuff. I'm like,
somebody like me, it was very difficult for me to lock in.
Yeah.
And the things that we're talking about with Landmark or S is the foundation for a lot of like crazy stuff out in the world.
Yeah.
But if you can kind of like balance, I mean, it's like a weapon, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a gun.
Yeah. You know,
guns can be bad. Yeah. But guns can also be like wildly
guns
effective.
Don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah.
The guns are just guns, right?
And that's the thing with Landmark and this program S. It teaches you, oh, you know what it's like? It's like jujitsu moves on the mat.
Yeah.
And there's like belts and levels to, yeah. Because what you're learning is distinctions in life. You're understanding like, oh, if you look at that, you can understand it from several ways, but know that everything that you're looking at, you're building meaning into whatever you're looking at. And there's ways to distinguish meaning, and that's what these programs are teaching.
Yeah, essentially it's we never see the world as it is, we see the world as we are.
Yeah.
If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, right? Very simple concepts that make a lot of sense. And it's like, it's not what happens to you, it's what you make it mean that determines everything. You know, Tony Robbins has a great story, right? He shares about these two brothers, right? Their father was on death row. killed a lot of people, committed a lot of crimes. They interviewed the first brother, and you know, the first brother was also in jail. He also committed crimes, right? He was a criminal. And they said, why do you feel like you turned out the way you did? And he said, with a father like mine, how could it not? Which logically makes sense, right? Because that's what you saw growing up. That's what you modeled, right? That's the example you had. And they interviewed the second brother, and the second brother had a great job, had a great family, great house, everything. They go, why do you feel like, totally different than the other brother? And he says, why do you feel like you turned out the way you did? And he said, with a father like mine, how could I not? Both same answers, both same experiences is what they took from it. And so that was the huge thing that I got from it. It's like, what is the story that we tell about ourselves? What is the story that we tell about our experiences? And does the story support us or does it not support us, right? And that was huge. And you know, there's a lot of terms thrown out there in the world today. But unfortunately, you know, sometimes people think that, again, I think this also comes in the Vietnamese culture. Growing up, they go, oh, rich people are bad, rich people are evil.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of bad people that do very well, right? A lot of narcissists tend to do very well.
Yeah.
But why do narcissists do well? It's because they have a certain image of themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not about good or bad. It's how quickly you can make a decision.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, people that are narcissists are bad. They make decisions quicker for themselves,
yeah.
right? And yeah.
Every time I see somebody like you online in the mainstream, like, you know, white guys or white women, I could always hear the landmark, the S, you know? And then you get adept at understanding what the principles are, you know?
Yeah.
And you could even hear it like in Obama's
speeches.
The word possibility shows up.
Yeah.
This positive outcome. And it's not toxic positivity. It's just the openness to really be open to possibilities. The thing about these programs like Scientology, which is the root, Landmark and S is the root of Scientology, gone haywire.
Yeah.
Right? It's been
the other extreme.
It's the other extreme.
Yeah.
And it gets a bad rap in the world because, you know, all of this manipulation. And I wanted to talk to you about how do you process like that during that weekend at LifeWork. How did you get it right away? Because for me, like I said, it took me a long time and I still don't get it entirely.
Yeah.
But I know in your mind, because when I hear you do the thing on your clips, I know. I mean, this guy knows it inside and out, right?
Yeah.
Like if I imagine if you were like in a jiu-jitsu class for like 2 years, you would understand the pattern so quickly.
Yeah. So there's different parts of my story, right? But when I was going through it, there's a couple things that were very powerful. One was learning the distinctions. I think what made it easier for me was because my autism, right? I never really felt like my autism held me back. It caused challenges for sure. Because when I realized I was operating from a different operating system from most, then I leaned into it versus try to fight against it, right? I made it work for me. And how it worked for me in transformational seminars was, because I'm very logical, if it logically makes sense, I can get behind
it.
I don't look at the emotional side of it, just the logical side. But the part that was very valuable that most people don't get was the feedback part. Because most people, you know, are very nice. They're not gonna tell you how they really feel. They're not gonna tell you how you show up. They're just gonna either alienate you, ignore it, or just accept it as it is. But there's a part in the training where you get actual, I think it's the second training, where you actually get feedback on how you show up. And these are people that don't know you. These are the people that only experience you in an uncomfortable environment, which is the true you, right? Things that my parents wouldn't necessarily say or other things. And when I saw that, how I was showing up, and I was like, okay, now I'm starting to get it. Is this how I want to show up? How do I want to show up? And how do I need to operate and be to show up in that way where people can get it and see it? Yeah.
It's amazing.
This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan, the sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows, the feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
A lot of people think that, oh, I don't want to go to these programs because I don't want to join a cult. And I'm like,
Some of it is culty though, I will say. But cult just means culture. It has a certain culture, you know.
But I always say to people, like, if you're a badass, why are you afraid of being in a cult? Why are you afraid of being brainwashed, right?
Yeah.
So I never talk about it. I think this is one of the few times I brought it up in the podcast. But the times that I really advocate for going to a program like Landmark, a LifeWork, or Tony Robbins is when you have a bad breakup.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I always tell my friends, like, if I'm like mopping this guy off the floor because he's like so like done and he's just like broken, then I'm like, yeah, you should look into a program like this because it helps you refocus who you are.
Yeah. It's like a checkup, a tune-up.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, I think society has changed a lot now. I think when I was growing up, even when I was growing up, like the self-help section, the personal development section, nobody touched. They're like, oh, why do you, you know, like you need someone else to help you solve your own problems, like that kind of mentality. But in today's world, people understand the value of personal development, personal growth, which I think is huge. But if you look in terms of just sports, you need to have a coach.
You have to.
If you want to elevate, you got to have a coach, right? And the other thing about coaches is you look at someone like Tiger Woods, greatest golfer in the world, right? Maybe not the best person, but the greatest golfer in the world. He has a coach. His coach can't play golf as well as Tiger Woods. But why does he still have a coach? Because a coach can see things that you can't see. Because sometimes we're so deep in the picture, we can't see the whole frame. And so when you have a coach, it helps you kind of broaden your perspective. And I think that that's huge because sometimes, especially when you're stuck in a breakup, you lose your job, going through a divorce. I mean, that's kind of like a breakup, right? And you're going through different things. You're so emotionally invested that emotion overrides the logic and you can't see certain things. Yeah.
When I look at your work, I really want to call you up and be like, yo, can you help me? You know, can you get me out of the routines, the way that I perceive myself? What is the process of you helping people get out of their path, get out of their way?
Well, the first thing is, again, it goes back to the be, do, have, right? So many people are focused on the doing, not the being. What, like, think about it. When something goes wrong, they go, oh, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? Versus who do I need to be, right? And the thing is, you cannot outwork a broken identity. So the first thing is you got kind of like being the actor, right? It's like, where do you want your life to look like? What does it look like to you? What does it feel like? And ask yourself, how you're showing up in the world, is that congruent with where you want to go? And then you just reverse engineer it, right? Figure out where do you want to go, right? Then being completely honest about where you're at. And I think that's huge, right? You know, you mentioned toxic positivity earlier.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Because if you're like just ignoring, the key is not to be positive about everything, right? The key is not to look at it better than it is, but also not looking at it worse than it is. Just looking at it for where it is, where you want to go, and figure out what is that gap? What is that gap in identity, skills, habits? And that's what you focus on. Because so many people are focused on the end goal, right? And I'm a huge fan of basketball. And there's a great quote. It says, You don't win the game by focusing on the score on the scoreboard. You win the game by focusing on getting better at the game. So many people are focusing on the scoreboard instead of focusing on getting better at the game. But if you build the habits, the routines, it just happens naturally, right? Like in fitness, if you're just focusing on the weight on the scale, you might lose weight, you might not. But if you just know you just build the habits of, you know, not necessarily clean eating, but you know what you need to eat, you have a solid workout routine, and you just commit to every day having a solid day, that weight's going to happen automatically. And the stress is now gone because you're focusing on the process versus the outcome.
Yeah. But in order for all of that to even happen, you have to have this visual image of who you are.
And that's where it starts.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like how does somebody with so many years of trauma from their mom and dad just shitting on them their entire life or their environment, how do you get out of that?
Well, first identifying what the stories are and then asking yourself, is that really true? Mm. Right? Because a lot of times, you know, when you say like, oh, my parents didn't love me. Is that, you know, your parents yell at you, they don't agree with what you're doing. And you associate that with, my parents don't love me. Well, is that really true? And then, you know, you want to fight back and go, yeah, that's true. Because they don't support me. They don't want me to go this path. And you go, but that part might be true. But does that really mean they don't love you? And you stop, well, no, they do love me. They just don't understand. And then when that happens, right, then you go, okay, they do love me, They're just operating from where they're operating from. Now you can separate the two. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, my parents did love me. They just don't understand.
But it's hard to like stop myself in real time.
Yeah.
Because I'm going through this. I mean, we all do, right?
Yeah.
And I go to therapy, years and years of therapy, yeah, on top of Landmark and all. But to really click in and understand it and go, okay, I'm going to reshape my mind. I want to be a writer.
Yeah.
I really do want to be a writer. That's who I always want to be. But getting to the damn keyboard,
yeah,
and the laptop to write, and I know I got good ideas. I know I have these cool stories that, but to get myself to believe that I am a writer is such a hard thing, Julian.
Well, you just gotta look at your life and collect the evidence. Like where in your life can you collect evidence that you are a good writer? That people do experience your writing, that you expressed your ideas and people did accept it. They did like it. And it's just collecting that. Because, you know, a lot of us, we kind of create a negative highlight reel. So whenever we want to do something that's uncomfortable, what tends to happen is replay all the scenarios that are similar where it didn't work out, instead of looking at our lives and looking at all the scenarios where it did work out. And so it's kind of like building a muscle, right? When you work out, the first time you lift weights, it's going to be uncomfortable because you've never done it before. Then you start learning how to do it, but it's still uncomfortable because it's heavy. But the more you do it, the stronger you get. And it's just like that. It's a muscle. So when I first started, it was hard. I would relapse, right? Like something would happen. I would get triggered and I would react the same way I've always reacted. And then my coach kind of reframed it. He goes, but you caught yourself. You realized that you're being triggered. Most people don't even realize they're being triggered. So that's already growth. And then once that, I was like, oh, that's true. Then I started catching myself even faster. And then now, when it starts going, you react, then you realize you reacted, then you apologize, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Then you go, okay. Then you catch yourself midway, then you stop midway. And then you keep noticing it. Then you can catch yourself before you even take that action. So it is a muscle and it's uncomfortable, but you know, kind of cliche because we say in the training, the only way out is through. And everything is just a practice.
Yeah.
It's just a practice.
You sound perfect. What the hell do you have left to work out?
Oh, I mean a lot.
I mean, you get it, because I can hear the language. You know, yeah. I've gone through that training. But like I said, I think some of us have the aptitude to really get it. And some of us, you know, we're thick-headed. We're, I'm 51 this year. And how do I punch through and let it become me? But
yeah.
You're a young man. And I'm like, I can hear it. What more do you have left to go with this?
I mean, in what sense?
Progress. Like, do you feel like you've arrived already?
Oh, absolutely not.
How far along do you think you are?
I think there's this great saying, a finish never is, right? And for me, it's like not thinking I arrive is like, how good can I get? How much better can I get? And I love Kobe Bryant,
yeah,
the Mamba mentality. It's like when I go to sleep at night, I ask myself, am I better today than I was yesterday?
Yeah.
And the answer for, to be honest, most days it's not. Like I'm the same, right? There's certain days where especially dealing with autism spectrum disorder and being in industry like network marketing or coaching or whatever it is, I get socially drained. My social battery goes down, right? You know, we have a running joke. Julian's always going to the bathroom. That's what everybody always says, right? And the reality is like a lot of times when I go to the bathroom, I'm not going to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I'm going in there, taking a deep breath, right? I go on my phone, I disconnect a little bit just to reframe and then go back out there. So I set up different routines and different tools to be able to manage that, yeah.
Got it. What are you working on today?
So right now, a couple things I'm working on. I am working on a book, right? Not necessarily a traditional personal development book with like, where it's like factual, not that's not facts, but like tips and tricks and stuff like that. I think most people have trouble learning like that because they have to accept it, right? Like you said, because we're hard-headed. So telling it more from an autobiographical standpoint, because that's why movies work so great.
Yeah.
Because when you watch a movie, you are the character. You feel like you're experiencing, you feel like you're living it, right? And so work on a book, that's kind of what's mm-hmm. happening. It should be done in like 2 months, yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's everything to me,
you know,
getting that, all those thoughts out, because it's our philosophy, right? And we want to express how we think and feel to the world.
Yeah.
And it's validating.
And going back to the whole writing thing, because you said you want to be a writer, right? I'm pretty sure you read things. Are we allowed to cuss on this?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure you read certain things. You're like, man, that was shit. Like, why would you even put that out? So sometimes just realizing there's people with less ability, less talent out there.
Killing it
because they're just putting themselves out there. And just know that. Because if you can reference that someone's writing is not as good as yours, but they're still doing it, why should that stop you from putting out something that's better?
I think going back to Mamba, like the Mamba mentality, right? I remember thinking like when I was a kid, I was like, I'm always late.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just too late. You know, it's too late to be Mamba. It's too late to be Kobe, right? But I guess we can always be that. We can always transform ourselves.
You can change your life at any point, anytime. Yeah. And, you know, kind of so transformation, right? Going back to that. If you notice, Kobe Bryant was really good, right? But there's a couple of parts of his story that I really relate to that I pull from. One, when he was young and his dad put him into basketball camp, there was a whole season he didn't score any points, right? Didn't score any points. He was like, not good. And his dad said something to him. His dad says, hey, whether you score points or not, I'll always love you. Mm. So that triggers something for him, knowing that he'll be accepted no matter what, right? So that's good. But he made a decision that, hey, these people might be better than me, but if I go to the gym and I practice and I train, eventually, if I train harder than everybody else, there's going to come a time where my skills is going to overpass theirs. So there's that too, right? Listen, we're all dealt different hands, but are you willing to learn how to play that hand? Number one, just because someone's better than you is not a very excuse for them to outwork you. That's number one. But number two, the other thing that we got pulled from, unfortunately, Kobe's legacy got tainted a little bit through that controversy that he had. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history, it was when that point happened, he couldn't really perform in the basketball games. He was affected because after the game, he had to go to court, you know, all these different things, saving his relationship. It was at that moment he actually created the Black Mamba.
Oh.
Because what he did was he created an alter ego, right? He, you know, kind of like Bruce Wayne with Batman, he created an alter ego. And so in some psychology trainings and stuff like that, they do teach that technique of creating an alter ego. What does your higher self look like? Step into that superhero version of you. Right, and if you pretend long enough, but you're embodying it like as an actor, it becomes a part of you, and you see it in acting too. Like, you know, Heath Ledger, I mean, gave us a great performance in The Dark Knight, but unfortunately, he threw himself in that role so much that it literally became a part of him, and all the other things of the psychosis and everything, you know, kind of happened. But it works in the same way.
How do you create your content? How do you make decisions on what you're gonna say?
Well, my content actually has changed a lot in the last, I would say, year. Because originally, you know, I didn't really understand social media. I still don't. But I would just put out like surface level stuff. You know, I would copy other influencers or whatever it is, right? Like, you know, the cars and all that stuff, making that the focal point, right? And then something came to me. I was like, you know what? Like, who do I really want to be, right? And so I shifted my Instagram to becoming more like a mirror, sharing things that I wish I heard, things that I learned, being willing to go deeper, because if you don't show people who you are, how would they know? And so that's kind of how I shaped my content. Like, you know, what shaped me, what benefited me, what would I wish I would have heard? So essentially, like, I know it sounds kind of cliche, but like I'm creating something for the younger me. And so as I create the content, you know, my whole thesis of what I learned in my life is that you could become more and you can engineer your identity. So now I shape my whole Instagram building around different series. And ever since I shifted to creating series,
skyrocket,
it started growing. And I was like, wow, people really do want to hear this. People do really resonate with it. Because kind of like with writing, right? Sometimes you feel like, I know this is important to me. I know it matters to me, but is anybody really going to care?
Yeah.
And before I would create content for people to care, but now I shifted to creating content that matters to me. And naturally, through doing that, you're going to attract people that resonate with you instead of trying to capture everybody. Yeah,
yeah, because I think that everyone should be listening to your content for 10 minutes a day.
I'll Venmo you later.
I really do believe. I mean, I wouldn't bring you here. I wouldn't invite you here if I didn't feel that way. I really told my social media producer, dude, you got to check this kid out, Julian Dawn. He's like killing it. I mean, your messaging is making me rethink who I can be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really shaping it. And I, like I said, for 10 minutes a day, every morning, it's really like a meditation. Like you're reading, you know, something from the Stoics or, you know, things that will reshape the way you are being in the world is where you're coming from. And it's so, it's just so delivered, so like with so much clarity and force, but gentle at the same time.
I appreciate that. Because, you know, the way I create my content is so many of us are so go, go, go.
Yeah.
That we don't take this time to stop, look, see where we're at. Are we heading in the right direction? And then give people the opportunity to choose. Hey, if how I'm being and what I'm doing is working, keep doing it. If it's not, maybe there's a different way to look at things. Yeah.
So if people wanted to like get coaching from you, how does this work? Do you even coach?
So going back to that thing, what's funny is, so network marketing, right? When I started making money, my whole life changed, right? And then I became a multiple six-figure earner at 24 years old. I've never seen any other young Vietnamese people do it, right? Because you know, when you're young, you're trying to find people that look like you to model. And then when I realized that just because I can't find anybody to model doesn't stop me from being that person. And there was a heartbreaking experience I had in the industry, and I'm very open about it, right? And it's in any industry. I'm pretty sure you experience in film, music, and everything. There's people that you look up to. And I mean, there's great speakers on stage talking about God, talking about all these different things, the leadership stuff, and like, you know, logically it makes sense. And when I finally got in that inner circle, being young and naive, I started realizing that not everybody lives their message. And like, we would go to the after events, the after parties, I would hang out with them. And some of them, I would see them cheating on their wives, doing all these different things. And like just hours ago, they're promoting God. And I was so heartbroken by that. I couldn't process it, separating the message from the messenger. And I think that's also why like I stepped away from organized religion for such a long time, because it was the same experience. Because for me, I couldn't understand it. Yeah. Like, how could you do that, right? And so after that, I went back. And I was actually at that time too, when I was very successful, I was 210 pounds. I was in a very emotionally abusive relationship, right? That I believe I deserve. I had imposter syndrome, right? You know, going off stage, everybody telling me, oh man, you know, I love you. You changed my life. Everything you said was so powerful. But then going back to my hotel room, feeling alone, feeling broken. And so I actually walked away from the industry. I went back to the person that created the whole thing, and I got certified in transformation training. And so for the next 5 years out of network marketing, I did transformational work. I did seminars. I did seminars every week. That's also part of the reason why, like, I think I can articulate it so well.
No wonder. Yeah, this makes so much sense now. So you were like the leader. Like when you go to Landmark, yeah, you're the guy who's like, yeah, up there running the whole show by yourself.
The basic, the advanced, the legacy program. I loved it. I love watching something click for somebody, you know, knowing that you facilitated that, right? Because ultimately, I mean, the fault is when trainers feel like they did it. You didn't. You opened the door for them. Yeah, it's like, yeah, Morpheus, the red pill, the blue pill, right? You just offer them the pill, but they took it. And so that was huge. So I went back and I learned it. But also logically, I understood that there were certain things in transformation that were missing. Because at the end of the day, it also is a business. Everything is a business. And in coaching, it's all about clients, right? So when it started becoming more about enrollment, that's the part I didn't really like, right? Because you're forcing people to get more people instead of letting them naturally share. Because you know, my definition of enrollment is getting people to do what you want them to do, but them wanting to do it and them feeling good about it. Because if you get someone to do what you want them to do, they don't want to do it or they don't feel good about it, then it's manipulation, right? Because then it's no longer a win-win. And then so I did that for about 5 years. It was great. And also, I think being a trainer, like you asked me, like, how do you live, like, do that? It keeps me accountable.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, you know, I do have a look good too, right? You know, like maybe it comes from being Asian. You don't want to lose face, right? And because I know I have a global platform, because I know people watch my videos, they get value out of that. I lead people in the business because my own personal experience of being let down, that keeps me accountable. And that's how I stay on track, because I know who I want to be. I also know who I don't want to be. And that's what kind of navigates me. But yeah, I did transformation for 5 years, and after network marketing, I was so broke. Because, I mean, you know, it doesn't pay as well as people think. It can.
Yeah.
But again, it's a business. There's different expenses. And it came to a point where I didn't know how to process it, because every weekend, I'm watching people change their lives. People getting out of toxic relationships, people getting into healthy relationships, people repairing relationships, people losing weight, you know, people going from making $4,000 a month to making $400,000 a month, knowing that I helped them do that.
This is transformational,
yeah,
or network?
Transformation.
Oh, transformation.
And they're crediting me yet. But I'm in a
You're not making money.
But I'm doing the training every week. I don't have time to invest in my own life and do all that. And, you know, at the time, my business, it was all about the business. So I couldn't venture off, do everything else. And so when COVID happened, kind of gave me the way out, because I can't do seminars at that time.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, people have been able to make it work. But for me, I think it would have taken too much time. And because learning pattern recognition, I feed off being in the room. I feed off being with people, because I'm creating in real time.
Yeah.
Trying to do that in Zoom when, yeah, you can't feel it is, for me, would be extremely difficult with what I have.
Yeah.
And then so I shifted, And then I became a fitness trainer for a huge brand called Rumble Boxing. I applied the same philosophies, became a very successful group fitness trainer. And then I actually ended up becoming one of the only Asian trainers to represent Lululemon on their workout mirror and stuff like that. I lost 210 pounds. And so I did that for a good, 2 years. And, my wife's right there, right? She was my girlfriend at the time. And then kind of going back to like having a job, even though it was paying me very, very well, I didn't have time. And, seeing my parents working so hard, my parents are such great examples of a married couple. And I was like, man, like if I have kids, if we get married, I don't want to just end up being roommates. I don't want to be an absentee father who their kid just knows is working all the time. And so around that time is when I was reapproached by network marketing by two of my old mentors who were really great friends of mine. And I was like, kind of like hesitant. I was like, man, my life's so calm. It's predictable. I don't know if I want to do this again, but it was just the right timing, the right product. And I got back into it. And that's what I've been doing for the last 2.5 years. And going back to your question about coaching, I still do private coaching because a lot of my old clients ended up starting Inc. 500 companies. So when they contact me, I do trainings for their groups and stuff like that. What I specialize in is not really teaching people sales because every industry has its own nuance. What I kind of show them how to do is how to blend the different areas of their life. So their life outside of the business and sales doesn't affect their sales. Like how to deposit into your relationships, how to build your faith, how to build your body, how to, deposit into your family. So when you're working, your family understands it's for them and not like taking it personally, like you're spending time away from them.
All about enrollment.
Yeah.
All about enrolling.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, whenever I send people to Landmark, I always say this, don't do that. Don't buy into the enrollment. And I know it's like part of it's part of the curriculum, but if you get in there and you get turned off by that, you're screwed because then you start fighting it. Then you start, I just tell people when you hear it, just accept it.
Yeah.
But don't go off and run and call somebody and try to enroll people like right off because it'll shut you down.
Yeah.
But it's also a skill that you're trying to acquire, which is pushing yourself out of that comfort zone.
Yeah.
So enrollment is actually a good thing.
True enrollment is.
True enrollment, but it's hard to explain that to anybody.
Yeah.
Unless you live it, unless you've seen it. I've gone through Landmark, the forum a few times because the mother of my kids went through it when we first met because she was like very open-minded. She went through it. It really helped her. And then her sister and then several of my cousins and stuff. So I'd go back and do these refreshers. But I always have to warn people, enrolling is a very tricky thing.
It is. And that's why I go back to the definition, right? Enrollment is getting people to do what you want them to do, them wanting to do it. And I think the most important part people miss out is them feeling good about it. Right? I think in transformation, in network marketing, everything is recruitment, right? Getting your kids to
do anything,
eat their vegetables instead of like eating candy. That's enrollment, right? But I think the key is when it's natural and it's genuine, like you genuinely have something that you know that can benefit from the product, benefit from the training, and you genuinely share it with them, that's powerful.
Yeah.
But when you do it because it's a number or it's a have to, that's when I disagree with it. Yeah.
Julian, thank you so much for coming today.
Well, thank you for having me. I was a little taken aback when you asked me. I was like, I don't really know how much I can contribute, but okay. Like,
oh no, I recognized it like in 2 seconds. I knew. I was like, I got to get this guy on. I knew it. Like when I saw you, like I recognized the language. I live in that world, right? I don't talk about it often, but I recognize it because I strive to be a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? Thank you so much for agreeing to do it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I felt like it's a huge privilege for me. Thank you.
Where can we find you?
On my Instagram, @TheJulianDoan.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok @TheVietnamesePodcast.